environmentally sound for your mind. HRNradio.com.
Welcome to Kindred Spirit Show on HealthyLife.net. I am Lynn Andrews, and my show is on the fourth Tuesday of every month at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, and all of the shows will be archived on my website, LynnAndrews.com. As a shaman, author, teacher, and lecturer, I have a special vision of the people that I invite to join us. I see the beauty and accomplishments of my guests in a sacred way, and they are creators of wisdom and knowledge, and they share their experiences with the world community. We so appreciate their work and celebrate their value to all of us. Today we have an extraordinary woman named Mae McCarthy. And Mae has written a book, and it is called The Gratitude Formula. And hopefully, Mae, it is doing very, very well, as I have been told. And welcome to our show.
Thank you, Lynn. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, we're so happy to have you. I am so excited. Mae McCarthy is CEO of Bizzles, which is a she is a serial entrepreneur, angel investor, author, and philanthropist. And her website and contact is www.marymccarthy.com. And the gratitude formula and the path to wealth, accelerating business results, she is a best-selling author. And I am so interested, Mae, in looking from a shamanic, from a spiritual point of view, and also a businesswoman myself, how you have molded and brought together all of your systems into a best-selling book, and you are certainly a speaker and lecturer, and you serve on many boards of universities and businesses across the country, and she has a formula called 7-Step Success System to Create a life that you love. So, Mae, without further ado, what brought you to writing this book in the first place?
Well, thank you for asking that, Lynn. I actually wrote the gratitude formula to be sort of an advanced study after my book, which, thank you for your well wishes, my book The Path to Wealth did make it to bestseller status, and interestingly enough, it's a spiritual book, but it made it to bestseller status on Amazon in personal finance, which leads me to believe that, you know, consciousness and spiritual principles are waking people up in all areas of life. So I'm grateful for that. But I wrote the gratitude formula mainly because people were able to use that simple morning routine to prime their brain for success that I write about in The Path to Wealth, as long as they had a belief in possibility for their goals, for their intentions to be manifest. You know, if they had a belief that they could, in fact, have a physically fit, trim, toned body, then they achieved it. If they had a belief that they could have harmonious relationships with their coworkers, their customers, suppliers and vendors, their families, their community, then they would achieve that. But for those goals that were bigger than anything they've ever experienced before, or different than anything that they experienced before, what I needed them to know is that they shouldn't give up. Because sometimes when we don't have beliefs that are on par with the goals that we have, we can't notice those intuitive spiritual messages that are trying to guide and direct us towards achieving those goals. It's almost like because the brain doesn't want us to be disappointed, if it sees that we don't have a belief in possibility, then it puts those spiritual messages on mute. So what I wanted people to do is recognize, look, that success is just a system. It's not a secret. And all we need to do for those bigger goals, for those different goals, is shift your beliefs to possibility first, and then allow those spiritual intuitive messages to come through to guide you to achieving those. So that's why I wrote the gratitude formula.
You know, as you said, as we started talking, you said something that you do every morning. Can you tell my listeners what that is, if you'd be so kind?
I sure can. So in the gratitude formula, there are seven steps. The first step is a daily practice. And the daily practice...
I'm sorry?
The first step in the gratitude formula is what I call a daily practice. And the daily practice has a morning, a daytime, and an evening component. So what you're referring to as the morning part of the daily practice is having a meeting with yourself, with that spiritual source of wisdom, that all-knowing power of the universe, that creative intelligence, which I choose to call the chief spiritual officer, because I give all subject matter experts that I work with in business, I give them a title. I call them chief financial officer or chief marketing officer or chief information officer. And so I decided to give the spiritual creative intelligence a title, and I call it chief spiritual officer. So I have a meeting every single morning for about 25 to 30 minutes, and in that meeting, there are four steps. The first is to read something for 5 to 10 minutes that is uplifting. You know, something that puts you into a receptive mood. Something that says that ordinary people can achieve extraordinary things with this spiritual intervention, guiding and directing them. What that does is it helps to shift those beliefs into possibility. The second step is to spend up to 10 minutes and write out a gratitude letter to your spiritual partner. Mine is the CSO. So the letter is to be grateful for what you have and describe some things that you're grateful for as though you've already achieved them, the things that you want. So instead of saying something like, I want to lose 10 pounds, you would describe it with gratitude as though you already did. So you might say, I'm so grateful that I'm physically fit, trim, toned, energetic, and a healthy, pain-free body that's easily able to move through life. So describe it as though it's done. And then release your letter, release those words to this wonderful creative intelligence of the universe. The third step is to read, to speak those words that you just wrote down out loud. And as you do so, the meaning gets anchored more fully within you, and even your subconscious then will go on high alert to try and point out and illuminate possible steps to make those statements true. And then finally, you want to spend up to 5 minutes and imagine yourself in the movie of the completed goal. See yourself walking and hiking and moving through life in that physically fit body. See yourself with that big bank account, with all the money that you need to enjoy and to give to others and to invest and increase. See yourself in those harmonious relationships with others. So as you make that imaging more clear to you and get your emotions involved, then both your intuition and your subconscious will show up in more obvious ways to direct you on a path to achieve your goals. So that's the morning practice.
Gosh, that's just wonderful. do you work with guardians, power animals, angels, any kind of aspect of energy like that?
Well, I believe there's an all-knowing energy and power in this universe that created everything that was, is, and will be, and that I'm mm-hmm. part of that creation, and that mm-hmm. this creative power and energy works through all of its creation, including me. So I believe that it's all part of one creative force.
Mm-hmm.
That takes yeah. on many, many individual aspects.
Right. In shamanism, we work with spirit guides and power animals and angels or healing partners of one kind or another, which is, you know, what you're talking about. It's just a little bit different in that it is given a shape and a form. What common mistakes do people make when setting their New Year's resolutions?
Yeah, I think, well, first of all, I pointed out one example, and that is that they use word choices that are inadequate. And what I mean by that is, think about that goal, I want to lose 10 pounds, or I want to get out of debt. If the goal is to be wanting, then they've already achieved it. They're already wanting. So what they have to do is shift their words to describe what it is that they desire, but as though it's already complete with gratitude. So they might say, I'm so grateful that I'm financially free with a minimum or more of X number of dollars to afford all of my living, giving, and entertainment expenses and more. So they would. So using their words properly. The other thing I hear people do a lot, and I think that they're a little unconscious when they do it, and that is that they'll describe what they don't want, thinking that they're describing what they do want. I had a salesperson that used to work for one of my companies, and
uh-huh.
she was always the lowest on the ranking of sales quota. She always came in last. And I knew that she was dynamic and she had a good heart and she really wanted to help customers achieve their goals. But she was always last. So I decided to go on some ride-alongs with her to visit with customers. And I'd hear her say things like, I hope I'm not going to be late for the appointment and make a bad impression. Or I hope that I'm able, carefully articulate the value of what we have and not subject myself to losing the sale to my competition. So the thing about our subconscious is it doesn't understand the don't words or don't want. What it does is it makes a mental picture of being late, making a bad impression, losing business to competition. And so that was exactly what was happening. And as soon as I pointed that out to her and helped her to create some new goal statements, like, I'm so grateful that I always arrive on time or early for my appointments. I make a great impression and am able to easily articulate the value proposition of what we have to offer. As she shifted her words, within 4 months, she was at the top of the sales quota ladder. She had excelled beyond the success of all other salespeople simply by
shifting
her words.
Isn't that fabulous?
Yeah.
Gosh, that's absolutely wonderful. I think it's so true. And I think also, I don't know if you agree on this or not, May, but when you are saying to spirit or the unconscious or talking to whatever unseen level of consciousness, when you say, I want no harm to come to me, that is translated into, I want harm to come to me. In other words, the no is translated into a yes. So when you are saying, I don't want, or no thieves, please, around my home, you are saying, yes, I want thieves around my home. So you have, don't ever use the word no because it actually is translated as yes. What do you think about that?
Oh, I agree. And studies have shown, you know, in science, and of course we've proved it in spirituality a bunch,
mm-hmm.
but also in science they've proved, and this is outlined in my book, The Gratitude Formula, but they've shown that when people use words that have some negative words, like don't want or no, what happens mm-hmm. is a mental picture is taken of the action word, like harm come to me, or you know, disease. I want no disease. It your subconscious doesn't understand the no, and it makes a picture in your brain of disease or harm or you know, whatever it is that you're saying you don't mm-hmm. want. Being late for an appointment, making a bad impression. I had this other person who took a workshop from me because I travel all over the world and teach workshops and do speaking events. And this man said that his goal was that his Uncle Bob not be a pain in the butt at the family reunion. And we did the same process that we did for the salesperson, and we shifted his words. And I checked in with him, and I said, what happened? He says, I had the best time, because his words shifted to things like, I'm so grateful that I'm part of a family, and we have a wonderful time at our family reunion, and I get a chance to deeply connect with each of my family members and enjoy a peaceful and loving and wonderful time. Well, that's exactly what he ended up experiencing, and he even said that he had a good time with his Uncle Bob. See, if he's not looking for the problem and using his words to anticipate the problem, oftentimes the problem just disappears.
Isn't that marvelous? I think that is quite wonderful.
Yeah.
What are actions that we can take, May, to ensure success when it comes to our, say, resolutions for the new year?
Right. So, first of all, to take that time in the morning to write down, read out loud, and imagine yourself in your completed goals. As you do that every single day, what you're going to be doing is programming your brain for success. Now, here's the thing. One of my very favorite teachers of all time is a woman named Florence Scovel Shinn. And she wrote a little book. It was my very first metaphysical book. And it's a very small one called The Game of Life and How to Play It. And I got a hold of that
the
book.
The Aim or The Game?
The Game of Life
uh-huh.
and How to Play It. And she published this book in 1925. I took that book with me to college. My mother gave it to me as a gift, and I thought that I found a secret formula. All I had to do was change my words, thoughts, and emotions to be in alignment with what I wanted desired outcomes to be. And it was like magic. I was guided and directed to make those things manifest. It was really easy and fun. Well, that's one of the ways that we program our subconscious. Is first thing in the morning, whatever we put in is what we're going to notice more evidence of throughout the day. So what Florence Scovel Shinn said is that if we take the time to program our subconscious, then we'll start to see more evidence of that occurring in our life. But if we don't take the time, then whatever the rest of the world wants to program into our subconscious, we'll notice more evidence of that. So to achieve your resolutions, you've got to be very clear on what you want those outcomes to be and take the time every morning to review them first thing before everybody else in the world tells you what to pay attention to.
You know, I think it's interesting that you're mentioning emotion because what you're really talking about is in my world, is that you're talking about a ceremony. You create a ceremony in the morning of self-worth, say, and the daily practice and all of the things that you just gave us. But for that to be successful, it has to have the emotion behind it, as you were saying. And I think I'm just reiterating this because I think it's vastly important. Emotions can be our worst enemy. They can drown us, or they can be one of the greatest assets in your life. They empower your ceremony. If you are having, you want a new car so badly, you have to feel what it's like when you see that new car. And P.S., it's all paid for, right, Meg?
Exactly. And in fact, in the gratitude formula, I talk about what I call making what you want familiar and welcome. And again, these are for those bigger goals, and emotion plays a huge part in that.
Yes. We have to stop a moment for station identification, and I'll be right back with Mae McCarthy.
HRNradio.com, where positive people and podcasts unite.
We are back with Mae McCarthy, and we were talking, Mae, about loving what we imagine. Can you explore that a little more for us?
Sure. So that idea of loving or having emotions behind what it is that we desire, that makes you magnetic to noticing possibilities in order to achieve those things. And in my book, The Gratitude Formula, I write about something that I call making what you want familiar and welcome. You see, doing your daily practice to describe your goals as complete with gratitude is part of achieving resolutions and achieving goals and living the life that you design and create what you want to be doing. The second part of it, especially for those goals that are bigger than anything that you've achieved before or different than anything you've achieved before, you need to do something to shift your possibilities. And I call that making it familiar and welcome. And the way that you do that is you read stories about or meet other people who have achieved exactly what you want to achieve. And I have a great illustration of that and how that works. I have a friend of mine who was the last child in her family. And she was told all of her life, I mean, her older siblings are much, much older than she is. And she was born, you know, pretty much as an unplanned event, but loved nonetheless. I mean, she was truly loved by her family. She just was much younger than everyone else. And she was told her whole life, ever since she was a little kid, that her grandparents, her parents, and even her oldest sibling had all been diagnosed with diabetes. It was hereditary, and she was destined to have that as well. And she told me, after taking a workshop from me, that she did not want to have diabetes. So she started using her daily practice to describe her perfect and whole and healthy and complete life, that was easily moving through life in a perfectly healthy body where every cell was operating as it was originally designed in perfection. And she's writing that out every day. And after a couple of months, she came to me and she said she was going to give up on the goal because she wasn't getting any spiritual, intuitive hits or leads to take action to make that goal true. And she thought, well, you know, who am I to go against science and hereditary issues and proclaim that I can be well if genetically I can't do anything about it? And I said, oh, no, no, no. All you need to do is shift your beliefs. So I asked her to go find people who had been diagnosed or who had hereditary issues that they had overcome, that they've been completely healed from. Go make their stories familiar and welcome. Start to understand that if they could do it, you could do it because you're made of the same spirit stuff as they are. And so she did that over several months. She continued with her daily practice. She also read stories about and met other people who had transformed their lives in seeming miraculous ways regarding their health. And she started to believe, wow, if they could do it, I could do it. If they could have good health, even after being diagnosed with stuff that was even worse than what I am looking at, then I could be completely healthy as well. Well, what that did was it allowed her brain to take spirit's intuitive messages off mute. And once that happened, she got all sorts of intuitive directions through other people, through gut instincts, through strong thoughts and ideas to go places and contact people. And through a series of these events, she ended up getting involved with this group that liked to hike and walk and cook healthy meals together and have fellowship and have some fun. After 4 months, she had lost over 30 pounds. She went to her doctor, and the doctor said, look, if you keep up this healthy lifestyle, there is absolutely no reason that you will ever be diagnosed with diabetes.
Wow.
For her, that was a miracle.
Yes.
And that's what I mean by making what you want familiar and welcome, is go out and test drive that car if you want a new car. Go see open houses if you want a new house. Talk to people. If you want to become a singer, go talk to singers and ask them what their journey is. If you want to be a PhD, go to a conference and meet PhDs. Learn their stories. I did the same thing when I decided I wanted to be an author. I went and met other people. And I got to the point where I was even meeting authors in the checkout line at the grocery store. It became so obvious. Honestly, Spirit was putting all these people
great.
In my way so that I would recognize, wow, if they could do it, I could do it.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is, of all of these things that you're saying, thought creates form. And we're a thought that has come from somewhere, the great dreamer, whatever, God, goddess being, that is the prime mover in the universe. And as a thought form, you can change the way that you think and the way that you are constructed in terms of repeating disease throughout your lifetime, because it's something that is built into your family. And what an incredible thing if you can break that, which, you know, I've seen it over and over, people with serious issues like diabetes, what you're talking about, they can shift out of that. They can learn to metabolize the sweetness in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
I can't
agree with you more. I mean, I really believe that. I've seen it. I've had the pleasure and privilege to...
Right.
To meet, you know, thousands and thousands of people as I travel around the world sharing this information, and I find that I learn even more. And one of the things that I point out in the gratitude formula is how science has caught up with some of this. And one mm-hmm. of the things that I found really fascinating is that as we arrive at this stage in our life, we have created a tremendous number of beliefs and behaviors, and some of those come from our family, like the friend of mine with diabetes in her older sibling and mm-hmm. father and parents and grandparents, and so that idea, that strong belief, oh my gosh, I'm going to have diabetes too, because this is just so, this is just the way it is, this mm-hmm. is how it has to be, they've told me this. So those strong beliefs and behaviors are associated in our brain with neural pathways. And the ones that are really, really strong are deeply grooved in our brains. And so I call them mind grooves. And they're kind of like being mm-hmm. stuck in a rut. The good news about that is that we can use repetition, like a repetition of a daily practice, and making what we want familiar and welcome by meeting other people that have achieved what we want to achieve. As we do this on a repetitive and increasing basis, we can actually strengthen a different neural pathway that believes a different belief in possibility. Once we have a belief in possibility, spirit will open the doors and direct us.
I think that is so correct. And we'll be back in a moment after station identification.
Uplifting Talk, HealthyLife.net.
I am continuing with May McCarthy, who is giving us wonderful ideas about how we're going to be vastly successful in the world, if you are not already. And one of the things that she touched upon that I'd like to go over with you is about forgiving, forgiving ourselves, forgiving others. May, can you tell me your take on that?
I sure can. I mean, there's so much that's written on forgiveness. And the most important point out of everything that I've read is that it's really for you, not for the other person who you're forgiving. The way I write about it and the way that I teach it is part of this goal attainment strategy, which is part of creating the life that you love. And let's think about what's required in order for someone to receive more of what I call the good that they are describing, more of the goals, more of the intentions, more of the resolutions, okay? If they want to receive more good, they actually have to have room within them to receive it. And I want your listeners to think of it kind of like a bottle of water. If the water is filled up to the brim in the bottle, can you fit any more water in it? I think most everyone would say no. In order to fit more water into that bottle, you have to pour some out first. And that's the way that I treat forgiveness. What I have people do is, as part of the evening section of the daily practice, is I have them do two things. The first thing, when they're laying in bed just about ready to go to sleep, they need to think of two or three things that happened during the day that they're grateful for and recite that out loud. Like, I'm so grateful that I got parking spaces in front so I didn't have to get wet in the rain. Or I'm so grateful that I got a wonderful time to visit with Lynn on her show today. I'm so grateful that my cat is feeling better. I'm so grateful that the sun was shining. Whatever it is, you don't have to look at any notes, but two to three things. And studies have shown that if we recite gratitude statements right before we go to sleep, it calms us down and we sleep better. The second part of the giving forth or forgiveness practice is to recite what I call a prayer. And what you do is say, and you can read it, and certainly if people go to maymccarthy.com and send me a note, I will send them an electronic art piece that has the giving forth or forgiveness prayer on it. And what they'll do is recite this out loud right before they go to sleep. And it essentially is saying, you know, I'm giving forth, I forgive anyone or any situation from my past or present that I need to, that's taking up room. I bless it, I forgive it, I release it, and let it go. And if there's anyone or any past or present that needs to forgive me, including myself, they now do so and we are free. And then you go drift off to sleep. That practice is actually taking the things that you need to get rid of and putting them outside of you over here on the side so that you have more room to receive the good things that you desire. Now, you may need to take a closer look at that pile of stuff at another time, but it's my belief that Spirit will guide you to take care of that pile. What I've learned from thousands of people who have responded to me when I've asked them about how the forgiveness practice is helping them, what they've told me is that as they start to fill up with more and more good, what ends up happening is they end up looking at that pile and it has just disintegrated into nothing. So that's how I review the forgiveness practice.
Yeah, I think that is wonderful. When people call in to your website, you will send, and they say they want a prayer, what or something.
Yeah, if they go to go to maymccarthy.com, there's a tab that says contact us. And if they just send us a note and say, I'd like a copy of the forgiveness prayer, then we'll send them an electronic version of it via email.
Of you speaking the prayer?
No, it's just a beautiful art piece. Because the power of this is that they speak it out loud every single night. And here's the best part. They don't even have to believe the words. The practice still works to remove what's taking up room within them, and it allows them to put it over here on the side so that they now have room that can be filled up with the good that they desire.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other thing is, this forgiveness prayer is not condoning the behavior of anyone from someone's past or any awful situation that has happened. I'm the first to tell you that there have been some really, really painful things that have happened in people's past. This is not condoning that. This is a goal attainment practice. This is an empowering practice that allows people to create the life that they love. But if they're filled up with stuff that's not serving them, then there's no room to be able for spirit to work. I mean, think about it this way, Lynn. If you can remember the last time that you were angry or upset or worried, and most people, you know, can recall some situation where they were angry or upset or worried. And my question to them is always this. If I came up to you at exactly that same time when you were really angry about something or worried or upset, could you and I have a conversation? And the answer most often is no, because they're so consumed with these whirling thoughts and emotions that have to do with this painful situation. Now, my point is that if they can't even have a conversation with me, if they can't hear me because they're so consumed with this other stuff, then they can't hear that still small voice of spirit either. And they need to get themselves to that calm place where they can recognize those spiritual messages that will guide them along a path to create the life that they love. And so this forgiveness practice, this giving forth practice, which is step 7 of the daily practice, helps them to get to a calm place and make room for what they want to receive.
Yeah, I think that's one of the most important things. I think, in a sense, a belief structure has a fence around your consciousness. It builds it. So if you are one of those people who say, my family, you know, has heart disease, therefore I'll have heart disease, that's a belief. And to tear that belief structure down is to shift the way you think about it, the way you think about the difficulty, maybe the weakness in the DNA, perhaps, of your family line. But you can always strengthen it. But you have to be able to name it first. You have to know what it is that really is upsetting you. And I think, I don't know if you agree with this, May, or not, but I think people have a great difficulty with that, particularly if they've come out of abuse early on. What do you feel about that?
Well, it's interesting. As I mentioned, I travel a lot and meet lots and lots of people, and some people share some pretty hurtful stories. When I check in with them several months after using this forgiveness practice, this giving forth practice, what they've told me is that as they release this, just as part of a blanket release, everything, they're able to shift their focus into the things that they desire for their life. And as they're not looking at all this pain anymore, they can receive more good.
Oh, that's wonderful. Your work is fabulous, Meg. I'll be back right after station identification.
Podcast to help you reach your positive potential. HRNradio.com.
You know, May, as we've been talking, I kept hearing in my head, what are your goals and what are kind of your, of course, you've been talking about all of us and yourself. But you talked about choosing your words very carefully, and when you're talking about resolutions or intentions. Can you elaborate on that for a minute?
I sure can. And I think I've given you some examples earlier, which
you have.
Instead of saying, I want something, describe it as though it's already complete with gratitude. When you are trying to figure out what it is that you want. You know, I hear people say stuff like, I want to be financially free. I had one woman say she wanted to be spiritually creative. And I think...
Spiritually what? I'm sorry.
Creative. And what I want to point out about a goal like that is that it's too vague. I asked this woman who is retired, what would happen in her life to make her believe that she had achieved her goal to be spiritually creative? And so she thought about it and thought about it, and she said, you know, if I achieve my goal of being spiritually created, here's what will have happened. My artwork would be for sale in a minimum of 15 or more places. I would have my artwork available on cards for sale and T-shirts for sale. And I'd be receiving, as a retired person, I would be receiving a minimum or more of $3,000 extra per month. But here's the best part. If I achieved my goal of being spiritually creative, I would have someone contact me at least once a week who would tell me that because they saw my artwork, they felt inspired to create their own. That's what...
What? Say that again, right into the phone. I couldn't quite hear you.
Oh, that if she wanted... She said that she would have her goal achieved if she had gotten contacted at least once a week by someone who had seen her artwork and said because they saw her artwork, they felt inspired to create their own artwork. And I said, okay, well, let's figure out how to write that up. So she created some goal statements saying, I'm so grateful that my artwork is hanging for sale in a minimum or more of 15 locations and bringing joy to the viewers and that they feel inspired and happy and joyful as a result of seeing it. And it's available for sale on note cards and T-shirts and just flying off the shelves, and I'm receiving a minimum or more of $3,000 per month. I just love being able to use my creative talents to bless others. So that became her goal. I checked in with her about 6 months later, and what she told me was that all sorts of doors opened. Somebody saw her artwork hanging in a restaurant that another friend of hers had referred her to. And because of that, they asked if she could be commissioned by the city to create a new piece of artwork to hang in a public building, which she did. And through that, she met somebody that was involved with a bunch of nursing homes. And that person asked if she would come in and teach art to the residents of the nursing home. She was able to use her talents in really remarkable ways. She was making more than $3,000 extra per month. And she was having the ball. She was having the time of her life. So a lot of times in spirituality, we are told to be vague so that we leave room for spirit to work. But I think one of the big mistakes that people make is that they're too vague.
Mm-hmm.
So they have
I think that's true. And what that means to me, if someone is too vague, is that they really do not know what their dream is.
Right. Right. So when you asked me what my goals are, and one of my goals, well, a series of goals actually, is that I'm so grateful that I experience great ease and joy in using my skills and talents and resources to bless others and to be blessed. I am satisfied and fulfilled and happy and strong and healthy and hugely successful and prospered beyond my wildest dreams. I am, I am, I am.
And so, you know what? You kind of come in and out. You said something, and then I lost you. Use skill, and then what?
I use my skills and talents in remarkable and fulfilling and satisfying ways. To bless others and to be blessed. I am satisfied and fulfilled and happy and joyful and healthy and strong and hugely successful and prospered beyond my wildest dreams. I am, I am, I am.
That's so great. And you are.
I am.
Yeah. Where do you live, May?
I live in just north of San Antonio. And in a little tiny town with 7,000 people called Spring Branch, Texas.
Oh, my gosh. My daughter was living in Dallas for a long time, and I was down there a great deal with her. And she had horses and so forth. And we would ride at the Fort Worth Fair Center. What is that called? Will Rogers.
Oh, how fun.
Oh, it was great. And then she moved to Houston. So I've been all over Texas. Well, sort of all over Texas. I don't think anybody's ever been all over Texas.
Well, you know, all the areas are so different. They're so, so very different. My husband and I moved here about a year and a half ago from Seattle.
Uh-huh.
And we live smack dab in the middle of Seattle, right on the water.
I was born in Seattle.
Oh, great. Okay, so there's a body of water between Lake Union and Lake Washington called Portage Bay before you get to the Montlake Cut. So we were on that body of water. And, you know, it's so crowded now there. And if I was in my 20s or 30s and I was in the tech industry, that would be the perfect place for me to live. But we wanted a bit slower life, and we wanted to golf more, and so now we live, you know, in what's called the Hill Country, and we've got deer and foxes and hawks and all sorts of stuff in our yard, and it's just perfect for us.
Yes, the Hill Country is fabulous. I love it.
We love it. We have family around.
Yeah, I bet
you
do.
It's just wonderful.
Yeah. Oh, golly, that is so wonderful, and it's a wonderful place to support your art and the wonderful things that you create.
Well, and I'm the same distance from the airport as I was in Seattle, so it takes me 35 minutes to get to the airport, and it took me 35 minutes to get to the airport in Seattle, so... it's an international airport. San Antonio, where we're north of, is actually the seventh largest city in the United States.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, if you look at metropolitan area, we drop to 15th. But
it's not as overpopulated as Seattle, is it? I mean, even San Antonio.
There's more space. You know, Seattle is between water and mountains. So, you know, actually Seattle proper is between water and water. So
you've got the sound, and then you've got like Washington. Right.
Right. So they're packing in so many people to such a small place.
Yeah, it's a shame. I mean, you can't get home. You can't get to work. Horrible. We lived on Maidenborough Bay in Bellevue.
Lovely.
Oh, it was heaven in those days.
Yeah.
Which was not that many days ago, but a few.
Where do you live now?
I am in Arizona.
Lovely.
And I am outside of Phoenix, Scottsdale, in a little town called Cave Creek.
Beautiful.
And I have horses, two horses, two goats, and two dogs.
I love it.
And my daughter just moved back in with me because her fiancé just passed away suddenly.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, he had a stomachache, went to the emergency, and died of pancreatic cancer 2 weeks later. It was really a tragedy. So my daughter is living here, and I think, you know, I don't want to get off on just our personal subjects as much as I would love to. But I think people are finding that they have to live differently, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, there's things that happen because life happens.
Mm-hmm.
And what we get to choose to do is, and
that's right.
We react
and we have to learn to act, but from a place of deep understanding and study. What scares me is that people don't do their homework.
Well, I think it all comes down to just that wonderful word of love. You know, if we are always looking at everything and reacting to everything first with love and then with our brains, I think the world would be a better place.
Yes. And it is a better place in so many ways.
Mm.
What a gift living on this Mother Earth is. And
truly,
I am at the end of my wonderful time with you. May, is there a parting... do you need to let people know how to reach you?
Yes. If they go to May, M-A-Y, McCarthy, McCarthy.com, they can see the two books that I've written, and they can download for free the first three chapters of each book and see if they like it. And then if they send me a note through the contact page, I will send them the Giving Forth or Forgiveness Prayer.
Gosh, that is really wonderful. And may I wish you so much luck and good fortune. And thank you so much for bringing your ideas and a very well-organized way for people to improve their lives and their spirituality and how they form a physical world through their imagination and good thinking. Anyway, May McCarthy, blessings to you. And I hope that I will meet you and talk to you soon.
I hope so, too. Thank you, Lynn.
Okay, thank you for being on the show so much. And namaste, everyone. Namaste to you, Mary. May. Golly, why am I calling you Mary? Your name is May, M-A-Y.